Welcome to Verbal Mirrors Reflecting Understanding podcast, where the power of words becomes a bridge between worlds. In this podcast, we embark on a dynamic exploration of the human experience, weaving a tapestry of diverse voices, stories, and perspectives. I am your host, Lavinia Richards. Join us on a journey that transcends boundaries, fostering connection, empathy, and a deeper understanding of the rich mosaic that defines us all. Get ready to reflect, resonate, and embark on a transformative odyssey through the art of conversation.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to Verbal Mirrors Reflecting Understanding podcast. I am your host, Lavinia Richards. Listen, we got a powerful topic today, y'all. We're talking about the intersection of strength and vulnerability, exploring women's experiences after leaving abusive partners. We're going to get real with it today. And I have a powerhouse with me today, an amazing young lady. Her name is Miss Lex Burridge. How are you doing, Queen?
Hi, good morning. How are you? I'm doing fantastic. How are you this morning?
I'm doing amazing. Listen, first of all, I want to welcome you to Verbal Mirrors. You know, we really welcome you and thank you for, you know, taking the time to speak to our listeners today. And so before we get started, I already told them what the topic is, but go ahead and let them know why, because I know why I got you on here, but go ahead and let the listeners know why you're able to speak on this topic. Let them know a little bit about who you are and a little bit of your background.
Yeah, so I am the domestic violence specialist at Brightwood Community Center, and I work with a variety of different women and men. But what I will say is our women face a lot of challenges here in Indianapolis, and there's not enough resources for them. So the work that I do is like pulling teeth to get help for our women that really need it. So that is like the overview for what I do, but it gets so much deeper than that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I know. Yeah. I talked to you and then that's what I love. And first of all, thank you, because I am a survivor of domestic abuse. So, and it is hard to leave. So this topic really resonates with me. You know, and I'm sure some of my things, will come up, you know, as far as that is concerned, as far as what's happening in my life. But we're going to go ahead and dive into it, you know, because we need to get with the first question. So the first question I have is, from your experience, how do you help women acknowledge and embrace their strength while honoring their vulnerability after leaving abusive relationships?
So with their strength, so starting with my women, I do a plan. So we start with protective plans on however that looks like, because I feel like when you are vulnerable, you're leaving situations, you need to feel safe, because that in your mind was your safe place. So how do you feel safe outside of these relationships? If you're not safe, you're always on edge, your anxiety is high. We have to get you calm. We have to get you in a state where it's like, okay, I can think properly, so that it is healthy for you and for a lot of my women, for their children as well. So if you are in this calm state of like, okay, I'm safe, or I know if I put up somewhere, that is the biggest thing for me. And we also do a safety plan, which is like, what do you need to survive? What do you need to succeed? And that is with jobs, housing, transferring your kids' school, applying for assistance, those things to help you so that you don't feel like you're alone or you don't have anything and you have to stay where you're at.
That is powerful, because that piece you said about not feeling alone, you know, you definitely feel alone when you're going through those types of situations, because a lot of times you don't want people to know that you're being abused. So you're not telling anyone. And then you're hiding it from everyone. And so you don't feel like you can go to the police because you love your abuser. So it's like a catch-22. So you don't feel like you have anyone, you know, to talk to release to help you. And so I like that because now you're putting resources in place. And I think that's very powerful. Now, what do you feel? How do you support women in rebuilding their sense of self-worth and confidence after leaving an abusive relationship?
So I ask my women, what does that look like for them? If they need their hair done, do you need clothes? And I do help with that as well, because what makes you feel you? What makes you feel beautiful? What makes you want to get up every day? A lot of women, their first thing is their kids. Aside from your kids, why do you want to get up and push so hard? You know, and my biggest thing for them is, if you need someone to talk to, I'm always here. You know, I contact all of my women every morning. Good morning. How are you? I want to know how your day is being started. And if it is not good, I will call you. I will listen for 2 hours, because whatever is sitting with you this morning, I don't want that to carry on throughout your day, because that could possibly harm you and how your focus is thrown off. So it really depends on the client that it is, because they all have different needs. But whatever works for them, I just go off of, you tell me what you need right now. We'll tackle it right now. We're not going to wait till later. I'll get back to you in 24 to 48 business hours. We need to do it right now, because tomorrow can be too late.
Oh, that's powerful. That's powerful. And it, what I like is that it sounds like you're creating safe spaces, right? You're helping create those safe spaces. But then you said something so simple, like, do you need your hair done? Like, that can make us as women, and I would assume men too, when they get their hair cut and they looking good, fresh to death, you know, but that makes women feel seen, feel, you know, beautiful, right? And so, especially after being abused, right? Because you feel like you're ugly, you feel like you're not wanted, you feel like nobody wants you, because why would he be beating on you if anybody did? You know, all of the things, right? So I like hearing the fact that you are creating that safe space. What do you need? And not tomorrow, now. Because sometimes it is too late. Sometimes it's a matter of 5 minutes too late, you know? Like, just, and so I like, I mean, I think that's really powerful though, that you reach out to everyone.
I have to, because there have been times where I've been in a meeting or I've done something and I missed a call, and I have not been in your situation, but you've told me enough, I'm scared, you know, for you. So if I missed your, like you said, if I missed your call for 5 minutes and I call you back and you don't answer, and I've called you twice, I do pop-ups. I do go to my client's home, and sometimes they may have just fell asleep, but I don't know what you called me for. And I don't want to be like, oh my goodness, she called me and I wasn't there for her. But like I said, they kept it from their families. They distanced themselves. Their families don't want anything to do with them. Some people don't have families, so they attach themselves to this man, and this is how this has happened, because they don't have anyone. But I don't want you to feel like you have to go seek somewhere else, because I'll always be here for you as long as you need me. So that's why I have that safe space, because like you said, some people, they don't have it. And some people don't even have the family to even reconnect with. So I don't want you to go back down a hole and say, okay, here's one more person who said that they helped me and it's not helping me.
Absolutely. And I always say this, people don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. I don't care how much knowledge you have, because that's not going to help me if I'm getting beat up. You know, I need resources. I need help. I need to know someone like you exists that's in my corner, because, you know, I like what you said. Sometimes people don't have the family, and sometimes the family, it's kind of like your abuser too, because they're calling you all these names. You're so stupid. Why would you, if they do know, because it's somebody that knows, right? Like, even if you don't think they know, somebody knows. And so you hear later, oh, she's so stupid. Oh, how could she let him do this? And, you know, and it's so all of these things. So you're dealing with the weight of your abuser and the weight of the people who do know. That's the reason why so many people keep it inside, because it's already enough weight being abused, right? And people are so judgmental until it's them, you know, so you don't know. And so sometimes, and I'm not trying to say that this always happens, but sometimes that can be a matter of life or death for someone, because it can trigger them into wanting to harm themselves because they feel like they have no outlet. They're being hurt from every end, you know? And so I think that's something. And so just to know that you're reaching out, hey, what did you call me for? I may be one person, but I'm one person that cares. And sometimes that's all you need, you know? Yes. Oh, girl, that's powerful. Honey, all right. So in your opinion, how can society better understand and support women in their journey of reconciling strength and vulnerability after leaving abusive relationships? What can society do?
A lot of people are not going to like this answer.
Yep. So give it to them then. That's how I like this.
Because I live in reality. And if we're in this big fantasy world, everyone would do things a certain way, but we don't. Not everyone has the heart that I have. And you can't force someone to have these emotions towards a situation that they're not in. So it's really more so finding, I would say society, but the little niches, the little communities that could help our women. Finding the actual people that care, because then if we are involving society, you know, you're involving opinion. And then here comes the, she's so stupid. Well, wouldn't it just be common sense to leave? And it's like, you don't want to be around that. And it's like, granted, yes, I should leave. I beat myself up every day. Like, yeah, I'm stupid, but that's not what we want. And right. You do have positive people. You have negative people. And this is in any situation. So I believe that every situation is not for everybody. So don't include yourself in something where you shouldn't be. And if it's not your thing, not your forte, don't do it, because it's like you're forcing yourself now, but then you start seeing like the little snippy comments that could kind of get to people. And like you said, that could be a matter of life and death. We don't know what someone's last straw is until that last straw has come. So society could help by being thoughtful people, but that's a fantasy world that we just have to get out of in reality.
Yeah, I would agree. And that's powerful because, you know, people are so quick to judge until it's them. And I remember, you know, people who did know, because, I mean, I stayed for a long time. And sometimes when those people are saying, well, you should just leave. What? It's common sense. It is common sense. But what people weren't aware of is the fear factor of the sawed-off shotguns that had been pulled to my head, right? Of the gun that had been shot through my baby's room, of my mother's home, like literally, right? The being drug up railroad tracks, you know, beaten outside, right? Pulled behind the back of an alley, beat in the back of a car. So those people, like when, you know, people say, if I can't have you, nobody else will. That was my story. See, that was really my story. It was, he meant that, right? And so it was a fear, because I'm like, oh my God, if I leave this, he gonna kill me, you know? And it was hard because I was young. I was a runaway. I ran away from home, you know, at like 14. Never went back home because I'm trying to prove a point. Got my ass beat from 14 up until I left him in my 20s. You know what I'm saying?
You know, society will say that was your fault.
Of course.
You left home. Yeah. That was your fault.
Yes, how dare you? You know, I mean, why didn't you just go back home? And so there were so many things. And so people, like you said, if it's not your thing, it's not your thing. But don't be so quick to judge if you don't know what a person's backdrop is, if you don't know their story. Yeah, I wanted to leave. But do you know that I couldn't? Did you know about me being in an apartment and I did leave and he came and busted out every window, busted in the house and chased me through the house? You get what I'm saying? So leave at what cost, at what expense? My life? And so it's easy to judge. So I like what you said, that be nice, be kind, because you never know a person's story. And even though I'm not built that way to quit, if I were a weak individual, if I were a person that didn't have whatever it was that was instilled in me, you can call it religion, you can call it faith, you can call it spirituality, whatever you want to call it, something was ingrained in me to know that there had to be something better. I didn't know it at 14, but by the time I was 24, 25, I knew it. You know what I'm saying? And so for you to be in place, like, it's so powerful. And I do have a lot to say about it because I am a, again, survivor of it. So to hear you, and I know, I don't know your age, but it doesn't matter. I said, I went through this at 14, right? So now I'm 51 years old, but I'm able to tell my story and maybe now have this platform where I have someone like you who is a specialist with dealing with these things, where you're dealing with the women, the teenagers, and the kids. And like you said, men too, because men get abused. I don't know why people think men don't, but they do. It's some people out here like Rasputin, you know, that, I mean, seriously, right? And so, and sometimes it's not about that man not being a man, but if he really flip his wig, he might kill that woman. He knows wrong. He's stronger.
Now he's wrong.
Yeah, now, because she's a woman, right? So nobody looks at that. So I'm not just trying to make it a woman thing because I don't want this platform to touch everybody, right?
Yes.
But I just want to thank you for what you do because, again, we need that safe space for people to be able to come out with it more, where they have somewhere to go. Think about the people who have said something and nobody helped them. Their abuser found out. And now either they might be dead or they're in the hospital or something has happened as a result of them trying to leave. Girl. All right. So we talked about that, but I want to talk. Let's talk about a success story. So can you share any success stories or empowering moments from your work with women who have navigated the intersection of strength and vulnerability?
So we have success stories, and I will say success looks different for everyone because I looked at it like, girl, this is success, right? And she's looking at me like, I don't think I'm there. But I feel like that's just us as women, right? Whether we've been abused or not, it's like, I feel like I could be doing more. And right. So I did have a woman who was in a relationship. And it was her and her daughter, and she just could not get out of this relationship. And then she finally left in the middle of the night. Nothing. Her and her daughter had nothing. Put them up, you know, and the struggle was real. The struggle for the past year for her has been real because the shelters here are completely full. You've had COVID, so they weren't putting anybody out of anywhere. Then you have shelters that are full, and then they stay full when it becomes winter because you don't kick anyone out. So it's like, where do our women go if there's nowhere else to go? Then you have the resources. Like, well, you haven't been working. It was hard for her to get a job. You have not been working for 2 years. You haven't worked for however long, but this man told her she could not go to work. This man told her, you're going to sit here every day and look at four walls. I might open the curtain for you some days.
Yeah.
So it's been really hard because you have this experience from when you were younger. But a lot of people's like, that you have, that experience is what? Over 5+ years old. Do you even know how to still do this stuff? Do you need to basically go get a lower paying job? But it's like, how can a woman get back into society? And this is another thing as to why our women are like the way they are, because like, if I leave them, who's going to pay my bills? I don't have enough money to pay my bills. Being a single person in general in this life is hard. Mm-hmm. I'm married, and me and my husband are like, if we were single, Lord, we don't see how single people do it, but she is doing it. She has an apartment. We help with her security deposit. We help get her some furniture, and we are partnered with Bob's Furniture. So we reach out to them. We try to reach out to local thrift stores. I always encourage Marketplace on Facebook. What can we get you? She is in her, actually she's renting a home right now, and her daughter are fine. daughter's in high school, and she actually goes out and speak, because we do hold a commemoration every year, partner with Domestic Violence Network in October for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And mm-hmm. she did speak this last October, and it is just amazing to see what can be done. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't think she's there. She ended up losing a job, and then we had to go back through the whole process of you have to find a new job. But it's like, Mala, you're alive.
Yeah.
This is, I feel like all of my clients are success stories because mm-hmm. you got out alive.
Oh, say that.
So no matter where you are, you may not have a job right now. You may not have a car. Your car didn't broke down. Everything just, you feel like you're getting three steps ahead and getting not too bad, but you are alive. That is a success story because it would be a different story that we'll be telling if you were not here. And that's a sad story. Yeah. But for her, I'm like, you did it. Because to leave in the middle of the night, you had called the police many a times. He got locked up. They let him right back out. Told him, go home. You're fine. And it's like, what home? My home? You want to come back to here?
To here.
Where you just picked him up from? Where he put this gun to my head?
Yeah.
Where he put a gun to my head.
Mm-hmm.
This was home. This was the safe place that IMPD thought was safe for me, which right. wasn't. So I feel that all of my women are success stories mm-hmm. because something completely different.
That's the that is powerful. And I like that because everybody, you know, does not get out. Mm-hmm. Everybody is not a survivor, you know. And I like what you said because for me, I think I stayed longer. Of course, I was fearful. So we already know the fear factor. But I stayed longer because I was a runaway. And because, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand it's what you come from, too.
Yes.
So I came from a domestic violence situation. My father didn't beat my mom. My father divorced my mother. So he went on and lived his life, got remarried, you know. And I have a relationship with my dad. He got me on weekends. So I never want to make it seem like he was a deadbeat or anything. Me and my father are super close now. But when you're a child and when you're going through, you know, you want to know, where is my daddy? Because he should be saving me right now. Because this is not, why am I watching my mama getting beat up? You know, why am I watching this man? And I'm like 10, 9, 10, I'm going to say between 9 and 11. But either way, I'm standing next to my mother in my bedroom while this man holds a 38 revolver on us, telling us not to move. Right. And I'm like, what is happening? Right. So, and it was so ironic because I always say, and I know I'm redundant when I say this because I say that words don't teach. I don't mean that you can't hear anything and listen to words and da-da-da-da and learn from it and read. Words are in books. So that's not what I mean. What I'm saying is, especially for a child and even adults, normally a person is going to model what they see. I don't care how many times they say what they're not. I saw my mother getting beat up. I'm grabbing ice picks. I'm like, we gonna take this dude out. Like me and you, mama, like what's good, right? But then, and I all growing up, I am never letting no man do what my mother let those men do to her. Oh my God. And I turned around and I did exactly what my mother did because it was a learned behavior. My subconscious only knew that. The words sounded good. But the behavior was learned. And so when I got in that relationship, it was like, I should leave. But now I see why mama stayed. This is why she stayed. Okay. You know, because it's a whole different. Okay.
You want to know something? So in how I landed here, my mother, I have never been in a domestic violence situation. Actually, I'll take it back. I always say that, but then I'll take it back because I was as a child. Because I watched my mother go through that.
Right.
And my entire life, I'm like, this is not what I want.
Yeah.
You know, my mother has, you know, is an alcoholic, bipolar, schizophrenic, and a lot comes with that. My mother had me at 17, so this is my best friend.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ride with her forever. Till this day. And she is still with her abuser. Well, I think I was that my mother's no saint.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what, that alcohol, she get to go on.
Yeah.
and she could start some of this stuff, which mm-hmm. can be triggering for both of them, which is not healthy for either one. And I looked at it like that. It's like, I can't do this in my life.
Right.
Because my mother is not happy. Mm-hmm. Right. She has days when she's happy, but it's like, overall, my mom's not happy. Right. But I have a sister who is 2 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And we both are like, this is not what we're going to do. And yeah. I stuck to that. Mm-hmm. Even like you said, I got caught up in this. And it's like, this is what happened with my mom. My sister got caught up in the same thing. Mm-hmm. But one thing I cannot say is, yeah, I was in this situation. My mom was in a situation. And it's still possible for people to not be in this. Like, you chose to do that. And you still saw what was happening to your parents. But it's like, no, I don't fault anyone for that, because I have not been in that situation. Right. But my sister, who's 2 years younger than me, has been in these situations. And when I was younger, I'm like, what are you doing?
Right.
What are you doing? Right. But I have to think, we're not the same person. And I grew up more so as taking care of my sisters. Mm-hmm. So it was more so as like, I see this is what mom has going on, but you as my big sister, you're taking care of me, but I don't see a relationship. We right. went and spent summers with our dad, you know, we could always call him, but you were not there every day.
Right.
Our Monday through Friday, waking up, going to sleep, going to school, we was with our mom. So this is what we saw 5 days out of the week. And it's like, I got the 2 days out of the week. You know, that Saturday and Sunday is what I've built my life on. But my mm-hmm. sister built her life on that Monday through Friday, 5 days.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. the majority of her time, that's what she took with her. And I'll never be mad at her mm-hmm. for that. She's got yeah. out of the situation. Thank God. In those situations, every time she called me, hello. But me and my sister, like I said, we're 2 years apart. So we were extremely close.
Yeah.
So I was dancing anyway, but I knew when she wasn't calling.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk every hour. It's yeah. ridiculous. Even my mom, as much as me and my mom talk, it's crazy. But it's like, when I stopped hearing from her, you know, at first I'm like, you being fake, you being this. It's like, huh? It's mm-hmm. like, you don't want to talk, but every time you work, you did call me, you were by yourself.
Yeah, where you could speak and be free.
Exactly. And it's like, okay, and that's fine. And I was catching on, but I was still young. I'm only 25.
Okay.
I'm 26 in June. Awesome. And a lot of people look at me as like, I would have thought you were older. I took after my grandmother's. Because when I was with my dad, I was with my grandmother. Or mm-hmm. I would tell my mom's mom, like, hey, can I come over there? Can I stay? And then I end up choosing a high school that was up the street. So mm-hmm. I stayed with her. And it's like, mm-hmm. I felt like I had left my sister mm-hmm. because we're 2 years apart. So she still had to go to middle school. But then I got a car and it's like, now I can pick you up. I can take you. I can do this.
Right.
But it took that age of 13 and 16 until I could actually drive, where it was like the disconnect. Right. Because like, I'm going to stay with granny. Granny got it all together.
Yeah.
Granny don't deal with mama, because you know, she got some stuff going on that granny just can't be a part of.
Right.
And it's like, I took that and I feel like I left my sister. And it's mm-hmm. like, I feel like I left you, and maybe that's why you just took that on to say, and you ended up in these relationships. Because she was young. Like, when mm-hmm. she came to high school with me, you're in the hallway arguing, you're fighting with guys, and it's like, what are you doing?
Right.
And I get relationships can be frustrating, but he's stronger than you. I want you to
man. Know,
he's stronger than me.
Right.
And no matter how tough I think I am, girl, we not going to win. Wait a minute now.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Now, if the females come along, let me know.
Right.
We can't be doing this in school. So I don't fault anyone, and I don't like the people that say, well, you had the same opportunities I had. That's what you chose to do. You chose to stay. It's like, no, let's help people.
Right.
Everyone ain't the same. All the outcomes are not going to be the same.
At all.
So I don't fault anyone for that. But it's like, a lot of this stuff can be learned behavior. Because mm-hmm. I think I haven't got the domestic part of my mouth, but I got everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And a married woman, it had to change.
Yeah.
My mom was not a mom, right? Yeah. I had to learn that you have to clean this up. Okay? You know. And my husband cleans, but it's like, girl, I ain't gonna do all the cleaning.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I picked up things like just being a woman that was not taught to me. So there were things that I still had to relearn as well. So I don't want our parents to think, well, you know, I did the best I could, but you were still in this situation that does affect your kids.
It absolutely does. And I'm so glad you said that, because that was the thing, you know, and coming from, because when I left, I didn't want to go back to what was at my mom's house, right? So I'm just like, I mean, I had a baby by then and I had so many emotions. And for me, just being transparent, because see, my mom, I always say, I guess they did the best that they could with what they had. I am a parent and it is not easy. And I have made some graveyard plays as a parent, period. You know, there's no books. There's books, but there's no books to these situations that you deal with your kids, right? But in that situation, it was just kind of like, I didn't want to go back to what was happening at the home, right? And then by this time, because I was looking for love, like my mother would leave me at home by myself. So now I got my mother gone, or when she didn't no longer or couldn't no longer leave me by myself, then I started being watched by my big mama, who was an alcoholic, which was how I got molested. You see, so it was a ripple effect. So now I got all this trauma, all this childhood trauma. I'm not going back there, right? I'm thinking, I just deal with this, right? Because I had gone to juvenile. She sent me to juvenile. I was in group homes. I was in foster homes, right? So all of this, so I'm thinking, she gave me away. Go back for what? Go back for what? She gave me away. So I'm carrying it because I'm a child. I'm 14. What do I know about life, really, for real? I'm making adult decisions,
yes,
right, with a child's mind. But I've lived an adult life. It's so weird, right? So it's like, okay, and then I'm pregnant at 13. Then my father wants to blame my mother. Well, how can you blame her when both of you guys left me in a space and a place, right, where I felt that I had no one. So then when this man comes along, a boy at the time, the first young man to say, you cute, or pat you on the butt, you know, you're like, oh, Grace, cute. Stop going. What? Daddy gone, mama gone, but he here. Then you think that's love. And then it turns in and it escalates and you like, oh my God, what did I get into? So I don't want people to think either that it's always boom, you in a relationship, boom, he hit you in the face and it's like, ah. No, it's progressive. It's progressive. The tone could get louder. And then the tone can go into I'm in your face. And then the in your face can go to let me grab you. And then the grab can go to let me push you. And then the push can come to let me slap you. Then the slap can go to let me punch you and so on and so forth. And that's what happened. It was a progression.
Yeah.
So I think that people need to understand that it's not always so clear cut and dry, because like you said, well, your sister picked up one thing, but what did she need in that moment? You know what I mean? That's what, whatever it was that she saw, she grabbed something from that and she felt like, okay, in her mind, maybe my big sister gone. I'm here with this foolishness, mama clowning.
Clown.
And in her mind, she might be like, she's living the life over there with Granny.
She did.
You get what I'm saying? So now she's like, okay. So she want to get out probably. I can't speak for your sister, but I'm just saying, just from how domestic violence goes, you're looking for something. You're looking for something because you hear my best friend is gone. The one who thugged it out with me is gone. So now, right? So I can get out of here. And then you think it's love. And then you end up in the same situation. But you don't want to go back to mom and daddy because that's not better. So it's just, it's a cycle. It's a vicious cycle.
It's a really bad cycle. I will say that, because even my sister, like before going to college, she did try to go live with my dad. And it's hard because we've never lived with you all the time.
Yeah.
And our dad is being a dad. And she's like, oh my God, I can't stay here as a 16, 17 year old because you are getting on my nerves.
Yeah.
You're getting on my nerves. You got a million different rules. I'm almost grown. And don't nobody want to stay here.
Exactly.
So it's like you get this double whammy, but it's like, I for sure said, like, I'm going to come back and get you.
Yeah.
Just one more year. You know, I'll be driving. Right. I know how to drive at 14, but my grandmother would not give me a car.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just wait. Just wait. Yeah. And I started taking them. Oh, and then my mother had another baby when I was 12 and my sister was 10. It's like, girl, what did you do that for? What?
You didn't need not nary another one.
You
not nary another one.
And you've been going through all of it.
Seriously.
And now I've raised two. Those two act the same. And it's they act like my mom. And it's so, and I'm like, none of the three of them get along. And of course, my sister's now 16. She's still with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And we're from Detroit, so they stay up there. And I just know, like, that her and my mom's relationship, it is like cat and dog.
Yeah.
Like, it's so bad. But it's like, my sister did. It's like, you left me. But my sister has always told me she has never felt love.
Mm-hmm.
If it was not me or my grandmother's or my dad, like I didn't have love growing up. And then she looked at it as she was the middle child. And you know, people talk about this middle child syndrome. She's like, Lex, you are the perfect child that anyone would ever want to have. Perfect grades. I'm not getting the best of grades. I'm passing. But then you have the baby who is 10 years younger than me, who is the baby.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I'm left with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You got the perfect child in me. You got the little pretty baby doll that she just gave birth to.
Right.
So it's like, who was going to love me? And it was not more towards that my sisters didn't love me.
Yeah.
But it was like, who else? I see everybody else getting this love from everywhere. And I don't have that.
Yeah.
So like you said, the first person to tell you pretty.
Baby.
Oh, Lord. When we got to high school, and immediately as soon as she got there, she came in the ninth. I was in 11th grade, and I'm like, what are you doing? Because her first boyfriend she ever had was actually in the 11th grade with me. And I'm like,
okay. Oh, Lord.
What are you doing? And it's someone I knew on the football team. I said, girl, what you doing?
Oh, Lord. And in sports.
What are you doing? Because you know you got a girlfriend.
You got several.
Come on now.
Several.
And I said, you got to listen. But she was in that mindset of, I don't need you to tell.
I got it.
It's not even like that. I got it. She didn't have it.
Yeah.
But it was like, y'all need to let me. Everyone is already trying to do everything for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just trying to, you know, take these extra precautions, but it was still hurting her. And it was like, for so long, we haven't been able to let her do it. Let her do it. Because it's like, you're going to fail somewhere. I don't want you to fall too hard, but I had to step back.
Yeah.
Because now we're going at it. It's like, this isn't us. We've never done this.
Right.
I'm not going to say nothing else to you. But when you need me, I'm here.
And that's what I was going to say that. And thank you for saying that, because it goes back to that safe space, right?
Yes.
Like you said, okay, maybe I got to fall back. But know that I'm here no matter what, because sometimes that's all a person needs. Like, I can't really talk to you right now, but I know when I need to, I have that safe space. And sometimes that, again, is critical. But I thank you for sharing three separate views, right? Your view and both of your sisters, because everybody took something different. And we're talking about a 10-year difference, 2-year difference, 10-year difference, and how people can come from the same household and grab something completely different, right? Completely different. And that is so powerful. And I'm glad I wanted to ride with that for a while, because people think, you know, with that judgmental card, that is, again, that clear cut and dry, or, well, why is she like that? Because everybody needs something different. everybody sees things differently. What people grab from it and what they need from their mother or their father collectively is not the same as the other child. One needs more love. One wants more attention. One wants you to provide more for them. One wants, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just how it is. I have four children. And so I get it, right? So I'm glad that you dived into that, because I don't think people understand that everybody is not looking through the same lens.
They're not.
We might all wear glasses, but we're not seeing the same thing.
Shall right? we?
Girl. All right. So let me ask you this question. From a counseling perspective, what strategies do you employ to help women cultivate resilience while also acknowledging their vulnerability? So what do you do for them? What strategies do you help them with?
I would tell you what I do, but it don't always work.
Okay.
Of course, just talking to them, mm-hmm. but me just being there, and I would say 24/7, that builds and that helps with that vulnerability, because you became vulnerable with this man, right? But you were vulnerable with him because you felt that was all you had.
Right.
So now I am taking we're removing a big chunk out of your life, and I've inserted myself in that void.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So vulnerability, it's me. It's like, throw it at me. They throw punches at me. You know, they be talking to me crazy. I'm listening because I'm saying something that you don't like. Right.
Right.
That's fine, because they know to call me, and it's like, this is vent. I'm venting.
Right.
But they know if you don't say the V word at the beginning, Lex gonna have something to say. If you call me to vent, let me hear it, and I'm shut up. I won't say nothing. But if you didn't tell me that, and you sound like you calling me for a solution, Lex not a solution, but you ain't gonna like me. You ain't gonna like me for a minute. Right. Okay. I still reach out to them when they're not reaching out to me, because I made them mad or whatever. That's fine. But my biggest strategies is literally just keep reaching out to them. Right. And even if you can't get out of bed right now, I'm still reaching out. Like, hey, I reached out to this. I've been reaching out to these employers. You know, I apply for jobs for my clients. Right. Mm-hmm. Need that permission. I have your resume. I know what you're looking for. I'm applying. Hey, you have an interview this day. I'm getting you ready. The strategies look so, so different. And sometimes they just need to come in and sit. You can do that, you know. But what is your plan? You know, if you just tell me, hey, Lex, today, my plan is just to get up, take a shower, and wash the dishes. I'm going to wash the clothes, but I won't be able to fold them today. I'll get to them on the weekend. That is better than what you did, which was nothing yesterday. Right. So when we talk about vulnerability, it's like, these women already don't want to talk to anyone. I've talked to people already that could not help me. They call me stupid. My family is nowhere to be found. You have family members that's trying to take your kids. Vulnerability is something that comes so far down the line. It's ridiculous, but I'm here for that. I'm here for that ride. You taking too long to be vulnerable. I'm about to go. It's not a time frame. And right. It's really just listening what the strategies come from your clients. What do you want? Mm-hmm. What do you want to do? What do you see out of talking to me? What are you getting? Mm-hmm. Because I need to know, what am I providing? What do you need more of? What do you need less of? So that's how I operate.
Yeah, I like that, because the strategy is tailor-made, basically.
Yes.
You know, we're tailoring it to fit the person and their needs instead of a one-stop shop. Oh, yeah, instead of putting everybody in a box. Oh, you're abused. Everybody, let's go to this meeting. No, what do you need? Because I may not need the meeting. I may need to just come and just sit and talk to you for 10 minutes and just look and just feel your energy to know that I'm around somebody who genuinely cares about me.
Exactly. Some people already have a therapist for different reasons. They just need the outside help.
Yeah.
I've done the mental piece, but I get the physical piece. It's time to get to work.
Yeah.
I took care of myself now, so I feel. But some of our women is like, we might need to go to a meeting or two. We might need to have a sit down because you start following, you still mad.
Yeah.
You still ready to go fight.
Fight.
If I do this, you're not ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if I hear this, if he be still calling me, you're not ready. It's certain steps you're not ready for. We gotta eliminate. Yeah. But one thing I will say is I don't tell my clients what to do.
Yeah.
Right. I have clients that are still in these relationships. Excuse me. And yeah. I don't neglect them.
Yeah.
Because, I can't help you because you're still sitting over there with them.
Yeah.
Oh. Not everybody can get out at the same time.
That's right.
But am I doing everything that you need? But when you go to work, can you talk to me? I know what's the hours. You know, I'm checking on you. I don't call you. You call me.
Yeah.
You know,
whatever it takes.
Whenever. But I'm not going to not help someone because you're still there.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's powerful that you said that too, because, you know, again, I said I was scared to leave, you know? So the stress of she sounds stupid. She ain't nothing but a kid. She gonna be on welfare. She ain't gonna do nothing but get getting beat on and have a bunch of babies. She had a baby at 13. So all the judgment, all the criticizing, all the ridiculing, right? Until you walked in my shoes. So, you know, I like the fact that you said that at the end of the day, it matters for people to know that they have a safe space.
Yes.
Regardless of what that is. If it's my hair done, if it's 5 minutes of conversation, if it's sending a text, if it's receiving a text from you just saying, I pray that your day is amazing. Sometimes it's, you know, just the little things, right? And I think we miss that as a society. Like, ooh, girl. All right. So my next question is, how do you address any internalized stigma or shame that women may experience as they confront their vulnerabilities after leaving abusive relationships, right? Because there's internalized things that we have. So how do you address that?
I'm talking about it. You know, I address that and I typically ask questions, and some of my clients have different like raw levels on how far they'll go. But majority of the time it's talking about it because they've never talked about it.
Okay.
And just with their conversation, something may trigger them because they can sit there and say something to me and be like, oh my God, I've never said that out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize there's a lot of things that I have not said out loud. And it sounds crazy coming out of my mouth. I know.
Right.
But it's like, and they're in shock.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you touch on that? And it's like, well, once they say, oh, I've never said that. And it's like, okay, now let's dive deeper into that. And then something else comes up.
Comes up.
Ask a simple question like, how was your mom doing? You know, and it goes on. You know, when you're reaching these internalized things that we're now adults, and I have clients as old as 50, these are things that they're now saying, like, I haven't said this since I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said it then, didn't nobody listen to me. Didn't nobody care.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept it there when I was, like you said, 13, 14. I kept it there. And I'm now 50. And now I'm saying it. And it's like, oh my goodness. I just said that. And I haven't said it. I haven't said it in almost 20, 30
ever
years.
Almost. Yeah, exactly.
So that's how, like, you really have to reach people. And I learn people. I learn how to talk to them because you can't talk to everybody the same. Everybody is different. So that is literally how you reach people because you need to be talking my language.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just talk to me and I don't like the way you talk and I don't got nothing to say to you.
Yeah.
And that's just the reality of it. I know some people hearing talking to my clients and they'd be like, she wouldn't be talking to me like that. You're right. I would not be talking to you like that because that does not work for you.
Right.
But I have hothead clients that the only way they're going to listen to me is if I'm getting up on them. Mm-hmm. And it sucks because I don't like doing that.
Yeah.
But that's the only way that you hear me. Mm-hmm. And then we work on it, though, because these are some of my downer clients. We work on that because I even use that with them. Like, hey, you realize this is your only way. This is my only way to get a response out of you because mm-hmm. you're used to all this yelling.
Yeah.
You're used to people doing this, doing that. But then when they stop yelling at you or they stop what you thought was caring,
mm-hmm.
you start to do what you wanted to do. I said, I don't like you. You know, I will still help you.
Right.
I messed up. Okay, it's okay. I'm not going to beat you up for it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to beat you down for that.
Uh-huh.
So that is literally how I work with my clients because I literally look, everyone is a one-off situation.
Uh-huh.
Everyone is different. You can have the same exact story in your relationship, but you didn't have the same upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't talked to the same way growing up.
Right.
So that's literally how you reach people on the inside. You reach them on literally how they're expressing to you how they would love to be touched and felt on, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I like what you're saying because you're saying, first of all, that you're hearing, you're listening to what people need. You're learning, building that rapport, that relationship with people. Again, not a one-stop shop, not a one-stop fix. Everybody is not in the same box. Just because me and you are both African-American, we do not have the same story, you know? And that's the thing. So how do you tailor that back to what you were saying earlier? Treating people as individuals. You're an individual, so let me deal with your situation individually. So that I can, because sometimes you don't, like, if that's not your character, I get it. But sometimes you got to knuck if you buck a little bit. Like, who you talking to? This is what we need to do because this is what you said you wanted. I'm here for you. But you're not going to keep on playing with me. And they be like, okay, Lex. Okay, girl.
You're going to get it done.
Right?
And then I'm like, why do I have to do that? I don't like doing that.
Non-behavior, though. Culture. What are they used to? What is their agreement? What if they agree to, right? It's something when you do that every single day and then you got somebody that's trying to change their trajectory of their life for the better. And that is unheard of. The subconscious does not know anything about that. It only knows what it knows. And that's the hurt, the trauma, the arguing. Nah, don't give me nothing tender. Give me something rough. Like yell at me. And it's sad.
That was me. Because my mama told me to do something. If she wouldn't yell at me, I'd just be sitting there. All right, I can get to it.
Yeah.
As soon as that voice went, ooh, we need to get up and need to do it now. Yeah. You're serious now.
Yeah.
But it's like, it
shouldn't be. Why did I do that?
She was serious when she said it the first time.
Yeah.
But yeah. It took me to yell for you right. to hear me.
Because that was the norm. That was the norm. If it wasn't the arguing or the cursing or the fighting or the drinking or whatever it was. So you like, oh, girl. Unless mama yelling, really, she ain't really, you know, because I'm not really paying you no attention. You know. Yeah. So that behavior and living that every day, you want to come and I've been doing something for, like you said, for 50 years. And now here you come, like Lavinia, we can do this. And I'm like, no, we can't. We can't do that. I ain't never been able to do that. You know, so you're literally trying to change a person's thinking. And that is a tough feat. When you have been conditioned.
For so long.
Yeah,
I've been married for 5 years. And let me tell you, he be like, it's showing again. I'm sorry.
Give me a minute. I'm working on it.
Because I used to be a yeller. I grew up in a household. We don't yell in this house.
Yeah.
We do not yell in this house because it doesn't. What does that saw? It's
a screaming
match. That is one thing that I love about myself. We do not do in here. But early on, when my husband and I were dating, he was the nicest person ever. And then one day, he got mad and was like, Lex, you don't know how to talk to people. I'm like,
I don't know how to talk. What are you talking about? I don't know how to talk to you.
But I had to say that I don't know how to talk to people because it's just so nasty when you don't agree with something. You don't have to always agree with people. It's like agree to disagree. But you don't have to get nasty. But my mama get nasty with anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm getting nasty until you get nasty because you ain't about to get nasty on me.
Yeah, I'm out nasty your nasty.
Exactly. And but my thing is, I'm not that personal.
Right.
And my sister's 23 and she nasty.
Yeah.
Right. But my thing is, I grew up so fast because I had to raise two.
Right.
I have this motherly thing over my head where it's like, people like, girl, you ain't 25, you lying. And it's like, I don't act like I'm 25. I have clients that are 25. Complete opposites. It feel like I had my 16-year-old sister. But that's what they need. So I'm okay with people thinking I'm older as long as it's in a good way.
Right, right. And where they can see the maturity in you, where they know that you have some skill set to help them. Because to me, age is not always a factor. Right. Because I can learn. I have looked at a 5-year-old and learned something. Mm-hmm. Literally. Like, that's how you do that. Yeah. You say you have a 5-year-old?
5-year-old. And I have a 2-year-old. He'll be 2 May 21st. And it's a humbling experience because he humbles us so much. I'm like, okay.
They teach you.
Right, bro. He is right.
Yeah.
So I will say you learn from different ages.
You do. And so the fact that it doesn't matter if you're 25, look at what you're doing at 25, where there are people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s that aren't even touching the surface with helping women like you are, right? So that's what I mean. Age means nothing when you have a calling and a passion and a desire to help people. It doesn't
matter. They be scared to reach out to certain people. That's what that is.
Yeah.
They be scared to, because I'm not scared.
Yeah.
It's going to help. I'm going to help. I ain't scared of nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody put fear in my heart like that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to see what it is.
So you can't tiptoe around those organizations in the
city. No, you got to go straight for it. This is what we need. This is what's going on. How can we partner to make this better?
Thanks.
For real. All right, so my last question. What advice would you offer to other counselors or professionals working with women who are navigating the complex terrain of strength and vulnerability post-abuse?
I would say so much. Finding those communities, the organizations that help, because even as advocates, specialists, counselors, therapists, we cannot do it alone. Find a team. You don't physically have to work with them, but I have a team built to say, hey, this is that. Can you help me with this? Do you know someone? You have to have these relationships that are just outstanding. What's another good one? Talking to each other. And also actually being there for your client. Don't let them be another name that you have in your email that you heard about until it's too late. You're getting back to them too late. That's why they all have my phone number, because the email is not the best way to reach me if you need help.
Right. Okay?
That is for people. I don't even see them 24/48 business.
Yeah. I have my people good with their people.
Yeah. No.
Right.
Be personal with your clients as far as your job allows.
Yeah.
Because I know you do still have to have your boundaries.
Because
my boundaries are a little weak. Okay? But that's because everyone else's are so far up with the organizations that they're in. So for those who are struggling in organizations, get out. If you say you want to help women, let's help these women.
Mm-hmm.
And don't hide behind nobody. Get out here and do the work. No matter how you got to do it, if you really want to help, do it on your free time.
Yeah.
But just get out here in these streets, the community, reach out, Facebook, even TikTok now. I got to learn how to work TikTok, but let me tell you something. It can help you.
Oh, yes. I am a TikTok queen, honey. And I look, I told you, I'm in my 50s. I'm 51. So, but I will TikTok away and mostly for business. But I love giving like empowering or encouraging messages or whatever. Because I have a lot of life history to talk about, you know, a lot of life experiences. So, you know, I definitely appreciate, you know, what you do. And like I said, I don't want to be redundant, but I do want to make sure that I keep expressing that, because as someone who is a survivor of domestic abuse, and I think people need to understand, domestic abuse is not just physical. Domestic abuse can be verbally, it can be emotionally, you know, as well as physically too. There's a lot of abuses that it all goes hand in hand, you know, because the name calling, you know, and the disrespect, some people can get spit on. I've been spit on. You know, I was literally spit on. Like, you had, that's the nastiest and most degrading thing that you can ever do in your entire life to somebody is some spit, right? But to be degraded to that capacity. I was 14.
I have a phobia of spit.
I don't like slimy nothing.
When you just said that, it
made you sick. Oh my God, seriously. And so to be treated.
Liar, thief, and spitting, that was it for her.
Yeah. So it's, you know, and so to be degraded as a human being like that, and I still remember that, you know, of course, because you're not designed to forget. I'm not there anymore. I've definitely healed from that. But it was a process because I didn't have counseling. I didn't have someone that was a specialist to come along and say, hey, Lavinia, you're a teenager. Let me help you maneuver through this, being a teen mother and being abused and whatever, being a runaway and da-da-da-da, you know. So everything that I learned was on my own. Everything, you know. It wasn't so much that, oh my God, I went to counseling. No, it was, I matured. I grew up. I got tired of getting my head knocked into walls and holes being in walls and money being stolen from me and him being a cocaine addict and on and on and on. And so it was a matter of me realizing that if I didn't change, this would be my life for the rest of my life. That it was just a me thing. It was just an evolving and really deciding that I needed something better for me and my children. Because at the time I had two daughters, and what was I teaching them? And my oldest daughter had witnessed it. Right. So all of the things. And so just knowing, like you said, we need people feet to the pavement. Social media is beautiful, but do you know how many people hide behind the screen on social media? I could send a picture right now and have just cried 15 minutes ago. I put a picture. Hey, and
just fine. How you know?
No, but they seem like you don't even know how old that picture is, right? And you looking, we living our best life, laid on the beach and laid back. But the reality is, you ready to slit your wrist because this man just really, you understand, punched you in your stomach while you were pregnant and you having a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so I'm so glad that you said that. I want to make sure that you leave the people with, first of all, anything that you want to leave them with, but also make sure that you leave your contact information or in any other resources that you want to leave that women that are facing any type of domestic abuse or anything, so they can have those resources. So go ahead, you know, whatever you want to leave the people with.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm at Brightwood Community Center as a domestic violence specialist. We also have a youth advocate, Jay, there. We also do teen dating violence classes in the schools so that we are reaching our youth, high school and middle schoolers, so that they know this growing up. And then they see this at home, they have someone to reach out to. And we can always be reached at any time of day. You can find us at brightwoodcc.org. And also, I will say, for those who deal with a bunch of different clients, hurt people do hurt people. So don't fault them for the things that they may say or the attitudes that they might have. Be nice, be kind. That rubs off on everyone. And no one can ever hate someone who's so kind. They're just nasty and bitter at that point. And that's all I have.
Oh, I love it. Lex Burridge. Thank you so... Am I saying that right? Is it Burridge?
Barrage.
Okay, let me say it right, honey, because I ain't gonna mess up your name. Lex Barrage, right? Yes. Because we need to be respectful, you know. I want to say your name correctly. I want to thank you so much for joining us with your expertise, with your experience, and, you know, just being transparent. You know, you didn't have to let us know about your background, but that's why I had you on, because I knew that you had something to tell. And the mere fact that, like you said, you never experienced it, you showed so many facets of how people can experience domestic violence and take different things from it. And I really want to thank you for that and giving a broader perspective of how we as a society can come in and now help individuals who are facing this so that they know that there is a safe space, especially here in Indianapolis anyway, right, that they can at least start to get the healing and the resources that they need. So once again, I want to thank you so very much. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it. Mrs. Lex Barrage.
Thanks for having me.
This was the bomb. Listen, you already know that we're on every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can catch us on Spotify. You can catch us on Amazon. You can catch us on Podbean.com. You can catch us on iHeart. You can catch us on so many platforms. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook, right? Make sure that you share this. There are people who are going through the need this platform so that they can hear real stories with real people who are experiencing things, but not only that, that have overcome those things and that can give you resources. And we always say that, you know, we don't give advice, but we always let you know if you are being hurt in any kind of shape, form, or fashion, get help. Call 911. Find a safe space. Find someone that can help you if at all possible. We would never suggest that you stay in anything that is causing any type of harm. So, ladies and gentlemen, I've already let you know how you can contact us. Miss Lex already let you know where she's available, how to reach her, how you can get the resources, what she does. You hear her heart. You hear that her feet are there to the pavement. She's walking grassroots to the ground outside helping individuals, and she cares. So that's what we need out here. And again, thank you so much. We'll catch you next week, same time, 10 o'clock a.m., where you can hear it raw, uncut, real on Verbal Mirrors Reflecting Understanding podcast. So ladies and gentlemen, you already know how we do. We're going to close us out with a good old video so you can hear that outro. You know our music. You know we get down. But again, thank you so much. And we are going to close out right now. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Bye.
As we wrap up another episode of Verbal Mirrors Reflecting Understanding, we encourage you to carry the reflection sparked here into your daily interactions. Let the echoes of diverse perspective guide your journey towards greater empathy and connection. Thank you for being a part of our dialogue. Until next time, may your mirrors of understanding continue to reflect a world filled with compassion and unity.